Welcome to Tribe of Two, the officially unofficial podcast for The Mandalorian on Disney Plus. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking about Season 2, Episode 2, titled Chapter 10, The Passenger. Aaron, what did you think of this episode?
I thought it was a lot of fun. I know some people, a lot of people, in fact, were probably expecting Boba Fett, a Boba Landorian episode to follow that. But like, I don't think that's this show's style. This show likes to keep it kind of fun and loose and episodic and very X-Files, and that you'll have a Mando of the Week episode where he gets a little bit more Beskar armor, or he'll make a few more connections about his past or Baby Yoda's past. But like, it's not the kind of stuff we're used to, where it's like, you know, very serialized. One thing flows another. It's very much like the old Star Trek series. It's very much like the X-Files. And with that, I thought it was a lot of fun. You know, there's and you're going to get these like tonal conflicts. Like, this is a show that wants me to empathize with the frog lady and her the last of her genetic stock, the last of her bloodline, perhaps her species.
Right. Big speech about it, right? Just laying into Mando about not helping.
And then Baby Yoda is just horfing these eggs like two-fisted, like committing little Baby Yoda genocide.
And I'm like, you got to be that cute to get away with that. You have to.
You do.
If this was Jabba the Hutt eating those eggs, forget about it.
And then I guess there's the idea that like there's a lot of eggs in that tank, you know. Like, she can't even. She's obviously not being like, oh, I had 52 eggs. There's only 49. So like, I think it's okay, but it is. I thought as I was laughing, like, this is really bizarre that this show is encouraging me to like engage with Baby Yoda eating the last of this lady's babies, you know?
Yeah, it was fun though, and it was hilarious. It feels thin, you know. Like, this is you. So we're on a like a we get distracted from a side quest of a sub quest of the main quest in this episode, right? It's like you're going after Sephiroth, but you get a little distracted at the gold saucer, you know, you're gambling a little bit, having fun, and then, you know, you go on your stupid side quest, and then you, every time you think you're on the side quest and you can get this over with and get back to the main quest, 15 fucking alpha dunks show up in the overworld and you got to fight them all. Like, that's what this episode is. But honestly, I enjoyed it. Who cares, right?
Very, very rarely am I the guy in a podcast is kind of nodding and being like, I don't understand any of these references, but
it's all Final Fantasy VII. It's in the news, man. They've remade it.
When you said Sephiroth, I'm like, I recognize that one, but yeah. I agree, and it does have that video game feel like we talked about last week, that you've got like the main quest and, you know, Mando wanted to go on a side quest, or got forced to, because Amy Sedaris is Pelo,
Peli, I think is her name.
Peli Motto. She kind of just forces this on him.
Yeah.
Like, it's the man is like, but I've got other things I need to do. The people, you know what? And she's like, I don't give a shit. You got this frog lady. Who literally her name's Frog Lady and she speaks frog.
Sure, why not?
I talked about the WPMs, the Wikipedias per minute. I wonder how much fun the fans have creating a stub article for Frog Lady, species frog, language frog.
I looked it up. That's exactly what exists. And I'm sure that'll fill
what
out.
What else are you gonna do?
You know, Frog Lady's still in the picture, so maybe we'll learn a little bit more about her as we go, and maybe she'll get even a name other than Frog Lady.
Wouldn't that be something?
Yeah.
But like I said, as much as this is more episodic than serialized, there's still a lot of cool like connections. You know, the assassin droid that he dispatched in the prison heist episode came back in kind of an interesting way here.
And the X-Wing pilots let him go because of the stuff that happened in that same episode.
Yep, it all connects. Dave Filoni got another chance to jump into an X-Wing cockpit and be a boss. So it is, like I said, I'm digging it. Like every morning I wake up on Friday and I'm excited to get to see The Mandalorian. Even like this was like you said a lightweight episode, but the spider battles was really cool and kind of like scary and horrific, and had a nice little escalation, And I loved the, you know, him trying to like push the Razor Crest through like this big Porky. This thing's so beat up. And like I made this joke on Twitter that like I posted the Winnebago from Spaceballs and said, man, Razor Crest really seen better days, because that rear shot of it just kind of like bobbling through space and sparks. It reminded me so much of like Lone Star's Winnebago in bad need of repair.
Yeah.
But that's kind of, like I said, this feels, even when it's kind of silly, it just feels like Star Wars. Like there's so many things that give me a Star Wars boner, like seeing the updated X-Wing targeting computer graphics. They're just like, they're not modern. They're nothing like what these people would probably use, but they're deliberately recreations of the 70s stuff, just all cleaned up and looking cool. And how just cool the ice cave that they're exploring.
Yeah.
And these ice spiders out of nowhere that we're going to talk about, you know, when we get there. I just think it's a lot of fun, and it just effortlessly feels like Star Wars all the time.
Even the way that they shoot things, they use the language of Star Wars. Like when you're cutting back and forth between the protagonist Mando in his cockpit and the antagonist, in this case, the X-Wing pilots, right? Who are also, you know, in another part of this world, also protagonists in their own right. That's what Star Wars does. It shows you both sides of those battles, right? It shows you the Red Baron and also the fighter pilots he's trying to shoot down.
Yeah, you always have Darth Vader in his red cockpit adjusting his thimble screws or whatever the hell is, you know.
Right, right.
Whatever he's got a twist on his thing that's vital to locking on the Luke's X-Wing, he's doing his thing and... Yeah.
Yeah. So it feels neat. Like Star Wars that way. It's cool.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Got your happy price line.
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of Apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints, except it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
All right, let's get into the recap. We start off right where we left off last time. Mando's on the way back to his ship. He's walking through the desert, and he's ambushed by a few bounty hunters. One of them grabs, or are they bounty hunters? I don't even know who they are at this point, because that
it seems like because they did. I felt like that they recognized and were looking for the child
for sure. They were, but then, you know, one of them takes the child, takes Baby Yoda and puts a knife to its neck. But Mando makes this trade for the jetpack, which makes me think, like, oh, he's not really that concerned with getting the child. He's more just concerned with, like, getting something out of this. Is he, like, a hired gun that the bounty hunters hired? Or is he just, like, realizing, oh, I can't make this play right now?
I think it's the latter. Like, he had a crew of, like, four or five, and they were going to take the Mando down and, like, kill him. And like, once it was just him and the Mando's like, look, you hurt this child and I'm going to hunt you down and kill you. It's a fact. It's a fact of life. Or you can take this highly, we know how much this Mandalorian armor's worth. The Beskar alone. You got the jetpack. Like, that's probably going to be a couple years pay for this guy. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that's the other interesting thing is, like, this, we don't know much about Mandalorian armor and its capabilities. So this show is kind of like has the ability to just have the Mando pull shit out of his ass. Like, oh, I can remote control this thing now. And
yeah, I mean, he always does that wrist thing, you know, like puts his hand to his wrist when he's operating the jetpack, right? So, like,
does he? Oh, I never noticed that. I figured there was got to be some kind of, yeah, I always assumed it was some kind of like rocketeer style hand controls, but.
Yeah,
I don't know.
It seemed like it. So, like, you probably could have seen this coming if you noticed it. But yeah, he's just too cool for school, man. He's, you know, he's going to make this deal. He's going to get what he wants. He's going to take back the thing he traded. Like, don't mistake Mando for, like, this honest, good guy, right? He's a bounty hunter.
Especially when he's dealing with people that are hunting down, because he doesn't take contracts against children.
Yeah.
So, like, when he's dealing with a bounty hunter that's gunning for the child, like, he doesn't give a fuck about doing. Like, he'll string you up and let you get torn apart by wild animals. He'll drop you in a Sarlacc pit. He'll send you into low Earth orbit with his jetpack. Like, speaking of this feeling like Star Wars, I also love how they really lean into, like, that George Lucas fascination with, like, the sound of the engines. Like, when Mando's, like, tear-assing across the desert and that speeder bike is going by, it just sounds like it's 12 angry V8s all tied together.
Yeah.
It's very Looney Tunes. I don't know what it would take to actually hurt Baby Yoda. Because, like, going 150 miles an hour in a motorcycle and just getting, like, clotheslined and then tumble out, like, head first, ain't going to do it.
Right. It's probably anything that is intentionally designed to hurt him, right? Like, if you got a knife to him, if you got a blaster trained on him, if you got a flamethrower you're going to try and light him up with. I keep saying him. I don't know what it is, but it's an it. Yeah, anything that the show says is intentionally designed to hurt him will hurt him. Anything that it doesn't say that about will do nothing.
It was very cute. Like, this is Baby Yoda is a much bigger part of this episode than in the previous installment. And the way Baby Yoda runs over to the Mandalorian after the bounty hunter gives and, like, grabs onto his lower legs. And it's very...
Oh, my God. There are so many cute Baby Yoda moments. Like, the ice spiders. Yeah. When he's running away from the ice spiders, when he discovers him, he's making all these, like, scared noises. It's relentlessly cute.
Although, I gotta say, during that scene, like, there was, until the big one stopped, I'm like, is he just gonna eat his way out of this? Like, this kid's a bottomless pit. Like, he could just be, like, start, you know, horf, 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 all over the place with him.
Yeah, double fisting ice spiders.
Yeah.
I'd love to see that, man.
Yeah, double, and he's getting his feet involved, too. Just, like, just, all four limbs is shoving spiders in his face as fast as he can.
So his speeder is completely destroyed and Mando has to walk back to Mos Eisley, where he finds Pelly gambling in a cantina, and he's able to get a lead on more Mandalorians from her, but there's a catch. He has to transport the contact, which we know is Frog Lady, one sector over, and he can't jump into hyperspace because if he does, her spawn will die. And he's assured, look, there are definitely Mandalorians there, and so they head off on their task.
I wonder since Pelly's motto seemed like she was, like, I don't know if you say the word. Yeah, she was lying to Mandalorian. She's lying to the Mandalorian this whole episode.
Yeah.
Like, I'm wondering if it's just going to be a bust this next, what does this Frog Lady know for Mandalorians?
Yeah, how many times can you do this, though? How many times can it be the Marshal in Boba Fett's armor, or you know, a scarecrow that just happens to be wearing a Mandalorian gauntlet. I don't know.
Especially when we know the actual Boba Fett, or what we strongly believe is the actual Boba Fett, is stalking the Mandalorian now.
Right. Yeah, it will be disappointing if they continue to do that, but I don't know. I have faith.
Speaking of Wikipedia entries, this alien she's playing Sabacc with or whatever, Dr. Mandible.
Literally Dr. Mandible is his name?
Because he's got big mandibles. Jesus. You look him up on Wikipedia's Dr. Mandible. Yeah.
Wow.
He's got a species. It's like the Killik or something.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's I'm wondering if this will descend into like Rick and Morty territory, where it's like you'll have an alien called Poo Poo Penis Face or something, because I feel like that's about the level. It's Frog Lady and Dr. Mandible. Yeah,
right.
Yeah, all right. Let's break for lunch, everybody. Move on.
it was pretty ridiculous, but I enjoyed it. I also like that the first scene makes me think like when they take the jetpack for Mando, I'm like, fuck, that's the coolest thing about Mando. They're gonna take that away from him, and then the rest of the episode is gonna be like him trying to overcome some jetpack deficiency he has. And then they subvert that, and they're like, oh, they give the jetpack right back, but then they take his hyperdrive away, and I'm like, ah, man.
Yeah, I do feel like that there's a little bit of that. Like I was like, oh, because the jetpack opens up so much more combat possibilities,
right?
That I'm like, well, how do you balance? It's like anytime you start the sequel of a video game, they find some way to take your, you know, like at the end of, you know, The Witcher, you had all this shit that you could do. And then you start The Witcher 2, and somehow Geralt's forgot all of his goddamn spells and all of his, he's got to learn it all. And they got to find a way to depower. And I'm like, I wonder, it's like, oh, so they gave him the jetpack. He used it a couple times memorably. Now they're going to take it away because it limits the storytelling possibilities.
Yeah.
I wonder if they'll do that, like constantly shift the things and on the guys that he is a bounty hunter on the run with not a lot of access to funds and money and stuff. So like he will be, even though like if he was at his full power with a bankroll behind him, he'd be unstoppable. They're going to find these ways to kind of take some of that power back in realistic ways, which it's fine. It's an interesting challenge as a storyteller.
Yeah. I don't know how long it takes to get from, you know, where from Tatooine to wherever the hell they're going. I forget the name of the place, or if it was even given. But
Planet Ice Spider. That's what it was. It's some gas giant. They mentioned some gas giant. Yeah.
Yeah. I think I wrote down the name somewhere, but, I don't know how long it takes there to get there, but maybe they'll have multiple episodes. Like I absolutely see them needing to jump to hyperspace, right? Like they're being chased down by Boba Fett or whatever in Slave One, which would be fucking amazing. And they can't jump to hyperspace for whatever, you know, because otherwise it kills these eggs. So like they're 100% setting that up. There's no way they're not going to do that. Yeah. I'm just looking forward to how they're going to use it.
I also really liked him roasting the Krayt Dragon meat cube over an ion engine.
Yeah.
And Amy Sedaris just carving off floppy pieces of this Krayt bologna and shoving these greasy wedges in her mouth. It's again, it feels very Star Wars. I'm like, how efficient is that? Like firing up this star drive, the barbecue, this dragon versus like, I don't know, cooking it over a grill.
It feels like
Star Wars as fuck.
Star Trek, everything runs on kyber crystals, and so like the dilithium crystals are just kind of endless, you know.
Sure, yeah, until the story needs you to run out, and then you cracked it. Oh, you cracked it. Exactly. That thing would have been good for another 50 star years, and you done cracked it, Scotty. Damn it.
So they head out, and on their journey Mando tries and fails to communicate with Frog Lady. Baby Yoda eats one of her spawn, and they're stopped by a pair of X-Wings. These X-Wing pilots realize that he was on that prison transport ship and chase him to a planet where he tries to evade them by diving into a canyon. He manages to lose them, but crashes in the process, and his ship falls into an ice cavern.
Yeah. It's a bunch of things. Like I remember when I'm watching, because I never know what the show is going to do. Like Baby Yoda looked like he's starting to use the force on the eggs. I'm like, is this going to be another Vergence in the Force? Like,
oh no.
After the Mandalorian runs its course 50 years later, like, you know, 59 ABY after the Battle of Yavin, is there going to be some Force-sensitive frog?
Yeah.
That's like half the chosen Yoda, one.
Half frog.
Yeah, yeah. But no, he just wants to shove as many of these things in his face as he can, the greedy little bastard.
Love it. Another neat detail I liked is the Mando, you know, he speaks multiple languages. We've seen that. He speaks Tusken
fluently.
Hell
yeah, he does.
Hatties now, you know, and which makes sense. You know, Boba Fett obviously would have probably been able to speak Hatties to some degree. But yeah, it's cool to see that he knows so many languages.
I wonder, because like, it's like, okay, you got Hatties and you got Tusken Raider. I wonder if he specializes in languages that are on kind of the fringes of society, because we know that these worlds are out on the outer rim where there's not as much police and official government protection at all.
Right.
I wonder if that's like where a bounty hunter kind of like lives his life. So he maybe not doesn't know Corellian or whatever the inner city world languages are. Well, he obviously knows basic, but
right,
you know, he can't speak Mon Cal or something like that, but he can speak Hatties, he can speak Tusken Raider, the kind of outlaw fringes of society he's more familiar with, which that makes a lot of sense for what he's doing.
Sure.
I also love the detail. I don't know if they've established this, that little corner cuddy on the right-hand side of the interior of the Razorback's hold set was his, like, private quarters, because he's always throwing Baby Yoda in there.
Right.
But it's like, it looks like it's his, like, he's got this, like, little coffin-sized closet room that's just big enough for a cot and where he's got Baby Yoda and they sleep in there together. I thought that was cute.
Yeah, his little
bunk. I didn't realize that was his bedroom and he's sharing it with Baby Yoda.
Yeah, it's nice. I like the scenes where he's being chased. I mean, they're beautiful, like flying around in all these clouds and this ice planet and this cavern, this canyon. I do wonder why he's flying around clouds. Like, look, I've been on an airplane. They fly through the fuckers. Mm-hmm. They don't care about clouds when they're flying.
Maybe he doesn't have instrument rating on the Razor Crest. He's got to keep it the visual flight range.
It seems like it. Yeah. Because like later he talks about flying out of the cave blind because of the frost in the windshield.
Yeah.
So like, yeah, I guess it's just old, pre-Imperial half salvaged ship. Like,
need to go back, get the instrument rating, Mando.
For sure.
I actually like the setup, the whole like, you're supposed to be running a beacon. And like, it reminded me a lot of Han Solo trying to bullshit his way out of situations. And then I had a boring conversation anyway.
Yeah, we're going to have company. And
I wondered how they would do that. Cause like, I think this show, because it is this young adult place, it's like they're really skirting the line about what the Mandalorian is and is not allowed to do.
Mm-hmm.
Like, cause my son's watching this with me and he's fresh off playing Star Wars Squadrons. And he's like, I think the Razor Crest is a cool ship, but he's got to go get sliced up by these X-Wings.
Yeah.
And I was thinking back in my mind, I was like, are they going to have the Mandalorian blow away rebel pilots? Like the good guys, like the Mandalorian is a good guy, but you know, it's like him running around killing cops. Like,
yeah,
these guys are just doing their job. And they found this kind of middle path. I think it's a little hokey, but it does work at this storytelling level they're doing, that the, you know, the rebel pilots, oh, it turns out you're a cool guy anyway. We'll just forget this ever happened.
They're not shooting him down immediately. It feels very rebel.
Yeah. Yeah, they're trying to bring him in. And also I thought that it was like believable that like with, you know, some guile and pushing his machines to the limit, like he didn't have a prayer of outrunning or outfighting these things, but he can like lose them in a very Han Solo like way.
Yeah.
And crash through the ice and just this poor Razor Crest, man.
Yeah.
Is it ever going to run in pristine shape for longer than two episodes?
No. I assume he's got to just continue on his journey with them all stuffed into this cockpit. Do you know if at the end of this episode they're headed back to Mos Eisley or they headed on?
I think they're going to get on with because he, you know, but the thing is what I don't, you're assuming the Frog Lady is still going to be with them. I kind of assume that they're going to start and the Frog Lady is never mentioned again. Like, it's,
they're just going
to
drop her off.
He still maybe has like damage to his ship and he's got to get that fixed. But like, I don't know that the Frog Lady is going to have much more. Although on the other hand, I wouldn't be surprised if it is. I know there's a lot of people on like the official Mandalorian subreddit that they're actively trying to figure out what's going to happen up next week. I kind of don't want to do that. Like, if you got some theories and stuff, I'll consider it. But I kind of like And also, it just seems like it frustrates you when you're like, oh, they're going to do this elaborate plan with Boba Fett, and he's going to go to this particular Jedi temple from the Darksaber trilogy, and he's going to learn at the feet of, like, and then you get Frog Lady speaking frog. And you're disappointed, and I got a big smile on my face.
Yep.
I know which way I'd rather look underneath my Mandalorian helmet each Friday morning. So
yeah, it doesn't feel to me like they're going to yada yada Frog Lady out of the story. Just because in the first episode they pick up right where they, or this episode they pick up right where they left off from the first episode.
That's true.
So I expect them to like pick up right where they left off in the next episode, but maybe it'll be quick. You know, they'll just go to the planet, drop her off, and then be on their way. But we'll see.
Yeah. Also felt really good to see X-Wings running some sort of canyon or trench again.
Yeah, man, yeah, it's so cool.
Yeah, like if you'd have told me that they actually used the exact same cinematic action from the cockpit of them dropping in that canyon, I'd have believed, because I'm like, I kind of wonder if they did, because it looked very, very similar, even from the cockpit schematics of what the trench looked like and stuff. I thought that was cool.
So they wake up from the impact of falling into the ice cave, and Mando checks on Frog Lady Spawn, sees a huge hole in his ship, and Baby Yoda scarfing down a few more eggs. Frog Lady tries to tell Mando something, but he can't understand it, and so everyone goes to sleep again. They're tired from having been knocked out for a while.
Plus, this idea that, like, I and she's like cold blooded, so I think there's this idea like she's visibly shivering and she's worried about her egg staying warm and her staying warm. There's a little bit of a little bit of concern there in the plot.
Absolutely. And then, you know, after they go to sleep, Mando's awakened by Zero, whom Frog Lady has rigged up to translate for her. And she demands that he keep his end of the bargain, guilting him with the Mandalorian code, and he goes outside to assess the situation with his ship.
Yeah, I like, because, you know, like, Star Wars, you never know who's going to be good with, like, droids and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I, in this universe, like, I think that's getting this droid rigged up to be a universal translator is roughly as hard as, like, plugging together a computer and a keyboard and a mouse and a monitor.
I mean, if an Ugnaught can do it, come on.
Well, now, I thought Eggnauts are canonically, like, proficient with technology.
Are they?
Like,
I don't know.
Little, yeah, I thought they're, like, a little, like, taking it to, like a water does, or a duck does the water.
Okay.
But, yeah, like, I thought that was pretty funny. Like, you know, especially with his distrust of droids, especially assassin droids, this thing screaming at him in a dead sleep, and him like, whoa, 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 and it's just a frog lady with a microphone, like, yeah. Dropping a sick beat.
Now, I like, Richard. I have no idea how to say this guy's last name. Richard Ayoade. I don't know, but the guy who plays Zero. About?
Oh,
his voice. I really like him. So seeing him come back was cool.
Yeah.
So then Baby Yoda tries to get Mando's attention as he's repairing the ship. Frog Lady has wandered off, apparently. Mando takes Baby Yoda deeper into the cave, following her footsteps, and they eventually find her relaxing with her eggs in a hot spring.
Did you worry about Baby Yoda's ears getting so cold? I could, like, you know, those things are so thin and translucent that when light's behind him, you can see through him. I just kept on thinking, like, someone needs to knit him a cap, Mando.
Get
this baby's ears covered. Like, If these things fall off due to frostbite, he's going to be like 80% less cute.
Oh, only 80? God, I can't. I'm trying to imagine Baby Yoda without ears.
Yeah, it's. I mean, I think it's essentially.
It just looks like my grandpa. Like, I don't like it. I don't like it at all.
Yeah. But get some muffs. Get some muffs for this. Some socks. Throw them over the ears, especially when you're on an ice planet. Come on. I know you're not. Born and you weren't ready for this Mandalorian, but you're a dad now. You gotta get a hat for this kid.
Well, let me ask you this. Do you really need an infrared visor showing you the footsteps, the 6-inch deep footprints in the pristine blanket of cave snow, Mando? Do you really need it? Can you not just like look at the ground with normal human vision?
And how much heat energy is left behind in these footprints, by the way, too,
yeah.
on this. Like, I thought, like, when we had the Cara Dune scene where he tracked her down by using her footprints, I thought that was kind of like, okay, I don't know how long you can tell footprints from, but maybe
especially
it's...
Especially through shoes, through boots. I don't know.
I wonder if it's less, you're supposed to understand it's less infrared and more of just like a special visual tracking thing.
So yeah.
It's like any foot sign, it's just going to like a slight tread mark or broken branches. It's going to extrapolate and let him track or something.
Again, I ask you, can you not literally follow a path of footsteps?
Sure. That's a fair point too. That's a fair point. I think you can even sell that. Like before he used his fancy fission, I could see it.
Right. Yeah, me too. Yeah. I get it with broken twigs. You might want to like point those out.
Sure. Yeah, go into Batman detective mode, but otherwise.
So Baby Yoda follows its nose to another set of eggs, which turn out to be the facehuggers from Aliens. Okay, not really. They're some kind of like ice spider creatures. They all hatch at the exact same time, and Mama Spider, I don't know, big spider shows up to chase them all back to the ship. They're almost overrun in the process, but they managed to seal themselves into the cockpit.
So this is a really cool scene, and I actually recognize these the source of this these spiders, but they are these this is from a concept art from Ralph McQuarrie. Ralph McQuarrie is responsible for everything that you love and is cool about Star Wars. Mm-hmm. If you like the way C-3PO looks, you like the Darth Vader's helmet design, if you like the way the X-Wings look, if you like any of that stuff, it's because Ralph McQuarrie drew it. And he had this concept. You can see, like, this is a scene from Dagobah where Luke is exploring the planet and there's this milky white spider that's laying eggs, recognizably the same eggs. And his idea is, if you look in the background of these trees in Dagobah, you'll notice that they look a lot like the spider. And he had this idea that, like, these are going to be like coral, like real life corals. Like, and corals start off as like this mobile creature when they're spawned, and they eat food, and then they land someplace, and then they put down roots, and they become a coral reef, right? So the idea is that you'd have this, like, the early stage of this organism is this mobile thing that goes around carnivorously eating things and spreading its seed. And then once it got too big, it would kind of sink its feet into the ground and become a tree, you know, convert into like a coral reef.
That's cool.
So, yeah, this concept is actually, you know, obviously it's not an ice spider, but they adapted it to this. And I don't think the species has a name. This also inspired the show Rebels that we've talked about being a lot of inspiration for the plot of this. There were these spiders called the Krykna that were featured in several. They looked a lot like this, but they weren't like on an ice planet either. So the showrunners confirmed that they were inspired. Actually, both of those things, the Rebels thing and this Mandalorian creature, were inspired by that original artwork by Ralph McQuarrie. And I think it's just looks really cool.
Yeah, and you can see a shot very similar to that at the end of the episode in the concept art.
Oh, the concept art, yeah, which is So I love, like, it's one of the few shows I watch the credits of all the way through, because it's this I like the song. And I love the concept art even more.
And that's a cool thing that they're doing with Mando, I think, is like between Frog Lady and Dr. Mandible, and then these ice spiders that they're pulling from the original trilogy, they're kind of doing both things with the lore here. They're both creating new lore for the future of Star Wars, but they're also referencing the old lore. And sometimes they're doing neither, right? They're just throwing something stupid out, like Frog Lady, which they'll probably fill in later. And this is very much what the original Star Wars did. Like, if you remember the original cantina scene, when they walk in, there are 50 fucking aliens with Halloween store masks on, right? And, you know, you got the Ithorians, you got all these different types of aliens. We only really meet one, Greedo, a Rodian. And then the other ones you're left to speculate about. And eventually they'll come back and fill them in. And I think that's super cool. Like, not knowing everything about everything in the universe, not feeling like you have to give those details. Because if you look at, like, Solo. That's one of the things I think people didn't like about Solo, right? Is that they tried to fill every single gap in Han Solo and Chewbacca's relationship and Han Solo's origin, and just like
down
it was
to
too
his
much.
Name, where he got his blaster, where like maybe one out of five of those things would have felt real, but it starts to feel very forced once you start to try.
Absolutely.
And also, that's one of the things that we complained about in the prequels is like, you know, oh, Chewbacca is old friends with Yoda.
Yeah, it feels a little
Anakin
too
Anakin Skywalker built C-3PO, and like suddenly you got this vast galaxy, and it now starts to feel like a small town where everybody knows each other and everyone's related to each other. It robs some of the grandeur and mystery from the larger galactic scenery. So I do like this this concept, this Ralph McQuarrie's concept there. He called it a gnarl tree, these Dagobah trees that had the sessile juvenile stage. I like that. And this your point about the canteen is good too, because like they might have filled that in the years to come. Like once Kenner got going, it's like, oh yeah, everybody needs a name and you need an action figure and all that kind of stuff. But for a long, it's like Star Wars was just like, of course you're not going to know. Like, if you walk into an international airport, you're not going to know, like, what country everybody comes from just by looking at them and hearing them talk. It's like, it's what would be the point? The world's a big place and the galaxy's even bigger. So it's a great way to build the world build.
Yeah. It does feel like they're opening this world back up in Mandalorian.
Yeah. Not have to, like, there can be here there be dragons every once in a while. You don't need to catalog and Wikipedia everything.
All right, we move on to Mando firing up the engines to get them out of the cave, but another very large spider shows up. Maybe the same one. I was trying to look at its face to see if it was all blown up from that grenade he tossed at it.
Yeah, I wondered. You're right, because I don't think we actually saw it die. But on the other hand, like, you know, where there's a papa or mama spider, there's probably the pair.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought, like, it could be that you got two parents or something.
Whatever it is, it shows up and begins thrashing the ship like the Minox or something. Like, it's a pretty cool scene there. And it's killed by outside blaster fire, which saves them. Turns out to be those X-Wing pilots who were tracking him. They let him go because he left the other criminals in that cell on that prison transport ship in season 1, episode 6, if you don't remember that. And he also tried to save their crewmen, which I think is super important. But
yeah, he essentially did a 3-for-1 criminal exchange. The other criminal didn't make it. Like they blew up the whole space station, right? So no one really got lost.
Oh, right.
And then he allowed their rebel trooper tried to save the rebel trooper anyway.
Tried to. But I love how they draw the line at helping him repair his ship. They're like, no, we're letting you go. Don't push your luck, bud.
They're nice guys, but they're good guys, but they're not nice guys, you know?
Yeah. That's great.
Speaking of like we kind of yada yada over the running battle, but I really thought that there was a nice, like, kinetic sense of that. And like, you thought the baby Yoda was going to get left behind and him trying to keep up. And then you thought the frog lady, because I know my son is very concerned a frog lady was going to get eaten.
Yeah, it's like R2-D2 in a chase, right? Is what
you're
thinking.
But then she goes into frog lady mode and just starts bounding past him. I thought that was really cool. And I almost feel like the wrist flamethrower is a little overused. And I really liked the way they visualize it this time. They give it a little bit of visual interest. They have like him firing the thing up on his wrist with a close inset. And then you go in a wide angle from around the ice cave and you see it illuminate. Like, he's just lighting these things up. And then him torching it in their cabin. Like, that felt like, you know, I honestly is like, Jesus, I don't know how they're going to get away with this. And then as soon as you hear the whack, 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 I'm like, oh, it's the X-Wing guys.
And they make these rebel, the New Republic troopers look amazing as well. Like, huge badasses, right? Like, they're sitting there with their rifles, like, rapid fire, picking these things off from yards away. Sure. It's really good.
Yeah. They feel like real badasses. It reminds me of, I wonder if they're supposed to be in some elite unit, like Rogue Squadron. Because, like, Rogue Squadron always had that, too. Like, they're mostly pilots, but also they would do, like, undercover infiltration-type stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Did you ever read those? Because, like, there's a whole series of Rogue Squadron books, so it's all, like, Wedge was the main guy, and...
Yeah, those are one of the few that I didn't read. I just wasn't super interested in Wedge Antilles' adventures.
I probably read 100 different Star Wars novels, and Star Trek, for that matter, between the ages of, like, 12 and 20. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I remember them being a lot of fun. Like this, the idea that you had a special forces air unit in the Rebel Alliance. Maybe they're hinting at that. Because I always thought it was weird. It's like, wow, are these guys kind of like Marines, where it's like every pilot's a rifleman too, because they were going to town on those spiders.
Yeah, hell yeah, they were. I thought it was hilarious that he's prisoner X6911. It's like, let's just take all the numbers we can think of that are haha funny, have some kind of meaning symbolism and jam them together.
What's the 11?
9/11. Like, it's X6911.
11? Oh my God.
Yeah, I'm like, really? I don't know.
Favreau, you're memeing a little too close to the sun, buddy.
I think so.
I didn't even notice it, so.
Yeah. It was really surprising to me also that they're complaining about the frosted over windows as they're, potentially flying out of this cave blind, and he's like, it's gonna be a bumpy ride. Motherfucker is in the vacuum of space. The frozen void of space doesn't have defrost. No defrost whatsoever. Impossible.
I will say that the humidity in outer space is often very low.
That's true.
You don't get a lot of condensation you got to deal with. My boy said the same thing. He's like, this guy doesn't have window defrosters on this advanced ship. And I said, hey, it's pre-Imperial.
That's true. That's true. They didn't need it back then.
Yeah. Yeah.
But back in my day,
in space.
You got out in the car and you got the ice scraper out.
Yeah.
You scraped all the frost off your windshield before you went to space.
You really want to go broke in Star Wars, start a moisture farm in an asteroid belt. It's just, you're gonna burn through that seed money like crazy. I also love the Mandalorian making these like completely like jet black jokes. Like, let me know if this happens, or if that door gets sucked off of its railings. Oh, never mind. We'll all die. We'll all be dead before you can say anything. Uh-huh. Night, night. And then cutting the baby Yoda, and he's horfing another egg.
Yeah, he had that last right one tucked away.
Right underneath the eyes of the mom.
Yeah, she's conked out. Yeah, and that's the end of the episode. They fly out of there. They all, pile into the cockpit, which is the only part of the ship that will still hold a seal, can still be, compressed.
And that took some work because he had to patch a couple spider holes. God damn, you can fix a lot of shit with a lunchbox sized toolkit in the Star Wars universe. I tell you what.
For sure.
That and like a Leatherman multi-tool, and you can fix a hyperdrive, weld together duranium or Durasteel, whatever the hell the Star Wars equivalent is. It's,
yeah,
you get it patched up.
That hole is going to be a problem still, right? Like,
oh yeah, I think so. I wonder if they'd be like, I wonder if they are setting up some kind of limitation this season that, he's got to have the ship to work, but he's got to work to repair the ship, and it's going to, keep him busy on a lot. Cause like
a lot of side quests.
It's like
this escort mission is going to go on
the
for
Mandalorian.
A
yeah. Why wouldn't he single-mindedly go on his main mission?
Yeah.
You almost have to cripple him so that he has to do side jobs so he can get back to the main quest. So you can have the structure, which again, if you're finding this frustrating, I really think you gotta find a tank full of cope and inhale that stuff, because otherwise it's going to kill you. Because this is what this show is. This is the engine it runs on. If you get distracted, or if you hate it that he goes on 3-episode side quests and you want to get back to Boba Fett, bail now, because that's what you're going to get from the Mandalorian. Well, okay, that deals with the passenger. We'll see if we're going to be still dealing with the frog lady next week. But I think it's time to move on to the feedback section, Jim. If you'd like to send in feedback for our consideration, rather, do so at mando@baldmove.com, or of course there's a Mandalorian thread on our forums, forums.baldmove.com, that you can participate in each week if you'd care to. First up, Jake from our hometown of Cincinnati said, "What's good, fellas? There's been a lot of speculation on Baby Yoda's origins, and the debate on your show and other places is, could Baby Yoda be a clone? Kuiil, who's the Ugnaught character that heroically sacrificed himself at the end of last season, claimed that the child was not a clone. But we also have a doctor who is rolling with the Werner Herzog character that was featuring Kamino cloners badges on his outfit. Someone's feedback in your coverage got me thinking, maybe it's a bit of both, like in the likes of Boba Fett's origin. If you remember from the prequel trilogy, go to Kamino and visit these cloners, I will, said Yoda. What if, while he's there, either by will or unknowingly, an unaltered clone of Yoda was made on Kamino, which would be approximately 50 years ago? Maybe a quote-unquote unaltered clone would register as more organic to Kweel? Not the biggest Star Wars buff, but the timeline seems pretty close. This could bring in a connection between the origins of Season 1, Episode 1, surprise Baby Yoda, and the Season 2, Episode 1 surprise, alive Boba Fett, the unaltered clone of his father. Love to know your thoughts. I think it's an interesting idea. I wanted to consider the next email because they kind of go hand in hand in theory crafting.
Okay.
Because Jake, you're saying you're not super up on the Star Wars lore as far as the timeline. I'm a little fuzzy myself. Thomas Wasow.
Tommy Wiseau?
It's entirely possible that the famed writer, producer, and director of
Holy
The Room
shit.
Is a fan of The Mandalorian and The Tribe of Two. I don't know. But okay. One Thomas Wiseau said, I want to drop a little tidbit about the age of the child. The child was 50 during the opening of Chapter 1. Okay, first of all, since we're breaking this down in detail, was your confidence that a bounty record wanted poster would have the exact age of this child and it be correct? Because I don't have a high degree
Werner
of confidence.
Werner Herzog tells him that he's 50, right?
Yeah, it's a nice round number. Not 53, not 47, yeah. 50. Like, that screams approximate age to me.
Yeah.
So, like, I wonder if you can actually plug these numbers in like a linear equation. I don't know. But Thomas says he was 50 during the opening of Chapter 1, which is dated at the year 9 ABY, after the Battle of Yavin. This is... You probably should get used to this nomenclature because that's just like AD, BC for Star Wars nerds.
Wait, so before that would have been BBY? I don't like that.
Yep,
I don't
yep,
like that
BBY.
At all.
BBY, before the yeah. Battle of Yavin, baby.
I was born in 18, baby.
BBY, baby.
Yeah.
The Return of the Jedi takes place in 4 ABY, which is when Yoda dies, meaning the child was already 45 years old.
Okay.
This isn't the end of the story, though. The Revenge of the Sith takes place in 19 BBY, before the Battle of Yavin, and is when Luke and Leia is born. No huge tie-in there, as the child is still already 22 years old. However, if we look back one more generation, we find Anakin Skywalker, father of the twins, who at the time is also, you guessed it, 22 years old. The prophesied one, the one thought to bring balance to the Force, one of the strongest natural Jedi ever seen, and he seems to share birth year with the child. Mildly interesting, to say the least. Is it possible that this baby Yoda is another one of those virginses in the Force? Like perhaps a light side one to Anakin's eventual dark side?
Yeah, I think somebody wrote in last week to say that was like the working theory they had, the couple there. And it felt right, you know, it felt like an Anakin, Luke, Emperor situation, like the balance and the Force sort of thing.
Yeah. But also, so yeah, the unfortunately the clone thing feels like it's like 15 years off.
It does, yeah.
But I was also, trying to figure out this timeline because I don't feel like Boba Fett, he's either looking too old or not old enough. I mean, I guess some of that is like he spent some time in the belly of a Sarlacc, so who knows what that does to you. But yeah. I was trying to do the math on that because he was like a couple years younger than Anakin in... Yeah, I'm trying to think of like how old Boba Fett should be.
Those Sarlacc like digestive juices, they really have moisturizing properties, very moisturizing properties right up until they kill you and dissolve you.
Oh, yeah. Oh yeah, all the ladies in Coruscant, they buy that. Yeah. It's like Botox for them, you know.
That
you
1,000 years,
little,
it's heaven.
Right? Yeah, you get the right amount, and you got the face of an 18-year-old for 1,000 years, a little too much, and you turn into a skeleton.
Yep.
When you wake up, so you gotta get it just right. But like, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm a little bit, I think, more content to let the mystery be on this thing and let the show kind of. Because the other thing I think people are maybe getting themselves set up for disappointment is relying on too much of the Star Wars Legends stuff.
Yeah.
Because they are definitely borrowing the concepts and characters and all that. But like, if you think that like Favreau and Filoni is going to be beholden to these cartoons when they have an idea to do something different, like I don't think they're going to like do something that would inflame the fan base, and but I do think if they think something's cooler that they'll just change it and like, yeah. Well, it's a Star Wars legend. What are you going to do?
Absolutely.
Because is Rebels part of the Star Wars canon? Like, I know it came out relatively, but I had this idea that like before, I guess it would be. I think it came out the same time when Disney had, so it is all kind of canon. So they got to be careful.
Yeah.
But then, you know, I don't know. Like, there's also the Warhammer way to look at it, which is everything's canon, but not everything's true.
Okay.
Like, like this is an official story that came out of this, but maybe it's a rumor. Maybe things got lost in translation. Maybe things got exaggerated to suit certain agendas. Maybe there's propaganda that happened that changed people's memories of the events. So I think, I don't know, science fiction canon, any kind of fantasy canon, it's a tricky thing.
Yeah.
So, but I appreciate everybody's theorizing and getting all the timelines and stuff out. Rob Quay wrote us in and says, this is one of these great callbacks to the legend content. I talked about how I thought it was weird that this guy's name is Weequay, which is their species name. And he says, as we learn in Tales from the Jabba's Palace, I think that's a book series, right?
It was one in the Bounty Hunter trilogy, which I read that one. That's the one. Isn't that the
Tales?
The
I thought it was one? This. There was like Tales from the Bounty Hunt, Tales from the Bounty Hunters, Tales from Jabba's Palace, and Tales from something else.
Yeah, I think like that was like a series Tales of from short the Cantina. Stories.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It was like an anthology set. Mm-hmm. I don't remember this one in particular, but it says, as we learn from Tales from Jabba's Palace, that all the Weequays were called Weequay. I forget the details, but somehow there's a way to tell like Jim Quay from A Quay and all the other different Quays, but they're all called Weequay.
Okay.
I giggled when it happened in the episode. My wife just kind of rolled her eyes and went back to her phone. Okay. So that's cool. I misremembered the detail. I thought they did have names because they're individuals, and maybe the joke was that no one could tell them apart in Jabba's palace. But like, I misremembered the detail that like they are all called Weequay, which is minor ways to tell them apart. So, I figured the show would get it right. You know, if it's between Aaron's 30-year-old memory and these guys doing it, I'm going to trust these guys every time. Finally, we have Vicky Nolan. I thought it was cute how optimistic you were about the space warlocks not being part of the picture until at least 2022. We've got a pandemic, half the world on fire. We're up to Hurricane Etta, murder hornets. I feel like someone has to have space warlocks in their 2020 bingo card. Maybe, but as you point out, we have the Mandalorian back, and bring on the horrifying space warlocks. I've played Destiny. I know what to do with those guys.
Sure.
So that's it for the feedback we got. If you'd like to send us some more feedback, if you got some more hot timelines with the BBY and the ABY and the BBYODA, let us know at mando@baldmove.com. Again, our forums.baldmove.com. If you'd like to discuss things with our Bald Move community. Really appreciate everybody stopping by this week. We'll be back next Friday with another exciting episode of The Mandalorian. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
Have a great weekend.